Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to Red Ice TV. Great to have you all with us here today. We have a featured interview lined up for you today, and we're talking with Right Winger today. He sent me a really interesting article regarding this issue of the replacement migration, and the what's known as the Great Replacement Theory. Wikipedia now calls it a conspiracy theory, and there was a number of New York Times pieces that came out recently as well, talking about this issue. And of course, this has been reawakened, if you will, in the wake of the Christchurch shooter. And our guest today has actually primarily spent most of the time writing about gun control, legislation and things like that that's designed to take down the Second Amendment, primarily in America, and just gun culture overall. And these two things are actually overlapping in a very interesting way when it comes to this case. And as we know, in New Zealand as well, we've seen, for as usual after these kinds of events, we've seen calls in the United States to again control and regulate guns. But Right Winger, thank you so much for coming on. It's great to have you here.
Oh, great. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. Excellent. So you sent me this article, The Great Replacement, A Murders Conspiracy Theory or International Policy. That's how we title it, International Policy. So this is a very important topic. We've been into this for quite some time. This is what I want to dive into here as at the outset today. But before we dive into your article and kind of talk about how you approach this topic, just share a couple of words about yourself. How long have you been writing the blog, and how did you get into the gun issue?
Well, originally I've always been basically like a gun guy. I'm interested in gun laws and constitutional law, and reading lawsuits and things like that. New laws that come up whenever there's being a gun guy, I'm used to the whole, when the actions of a bad person is supposed to reflect negatively on, tens of millions of, good, decent people, that they're always trying to make me a felon in some way when one person does something bad. So I'm fully steeped in being, labeled certain things like a murderer and a terrorist when, this kind of stuff comes up. So, but that's when I started my blog, probably about almost 3 years ago now. And I did that originally because I live in California, and we have in the United States, some of the worst gun control laws here.
Oh, yeah.
And in the middle of that, we had, you had some, terrorist attack that happened. There was like San Bernardino. There was the crazed virgin shooter in Santa Barbara. And, they had those issues. And so they created like a whole group of laws, which we called Gunmageddon. Basically, it was almost like a dozen or so, maybe it wasn't a dozen, a little bit less than that, but still it's roughly a bunch of laws that came out that were, if you didn't follow things perfectly, you're just going to make, almost every gun owner in California was affected by it. And, I came out writing, what about those laws, against those laws, what they would in effect actually do. And I just got into the depth of it. And one of the laws, how I ended up kind of, getting into a certain amount of my little 15 minutes of fame there, was California was creating like a registry of gun owners, basically, because you have to, you have to do like a background check and get almost registered with the government. They'll keep a database of anybody who buys ammunition, and basically it's like a database of gun owners. And they also, if you had like a certain type of gun that they didn't want you to own, you had to register that as an assault weapon. And then, when you die, the state either confiscates it or you got to get it out of the state, and you can pass along to their children, all those kind of things. And so, and if you didn't register it, then you were a felon. So basically it was, creating, felons out of, a few hundred thousand people here in California. And, if they were going to make a database of gun owners, I was going to make a database of tyrants, the people who actually
Indeed.
Did this. And so,
yeah, it's good.
So that's long story short, I created a thing called the Tyrant Registry. It was, it got some news attention. There was the state tried to come in and actually did shut down. You talk about tech censorship and governments. Well, the government actually told a WordPress to remove my article of the tyrant.
Single article, not your whole blog?
Yes. Yeah, they took down the one single article for it, because there was actually a California law saying that you cannot post, address and phone numbers of public officials. And so but anyway, I didn't, it's not like I tried to secretly getting all this information. I just, it was all publicly available anyway. I just put it all in one spot. So like all those other sites where I got it from, it was still remaining there. But because I put it all in mine in one listed thing, I didn't make any threats or anything. I just said, hey, this is a database of tyrants. And the government came in because of law that they said, you know, you weren't allowed to do that. They took it off. They, you know, removed it from the internet. And so a lawsuit ended up happening. We ended up winning the lawsuit because you cannot ban, or at least in America, you're not allowed to. The government cannot suppress truthful information. And all my information was truthful. There was no threats behind it. There was nothing like that. What somebody does with the information, like if they go out and commit a crime, yes, they should be prosecuted for it. But the information I put out there was not, you know.
But that's, it was the, not that's the link they're doing now, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yes. And then, and that goes into now. It's like they, like the government now, you know, they can either try to suppress it as they want to, but then they also have their, you know, tech loyalists where, yeah, the government technically isn't the one doing it, but their donors, their friends in the tech industry, the ones they have, the ones that they have, you know, contracts with and everything, they just give them a wink and the nod and be like, shut them down. And they do.
Well, they do. That's right.
Yeah. They had, I don't know if you have, I know it's, you know, I'm getting a little too into my, you know, gun stuff here, but just so everybody knows where I'm coming from.
Sure.
From
this. No, go ahead. It's good.
And this also goes into a lot of the censorship on Twitter that you see. I don't know if you remember this last year, and it's still ongoing, but there was the guy who had like the 3D, like the files to 3D print firearms at home.
Oh, yeah, and that's right. His name escapes me now, but long
Cody
I've talked.
Wilson.
Cody Wilson, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah.
And so so he had that thing where he was, you know, you can put the information online. It's truthful information. It's just information. You know, if it's illegal in your state or country or whatever to you know, print your own guns, then hey, that's its own thing. But you cannot ban information. And so, but what ended up happening was there was another group that I'm affiliated with. They also, you know, put the exact same files online, and because you cannot suppress that. And then what ended up happening was companies like Facebook, I think it was Twitter, Amazon, all the big tech companies, basically did not allow their website to be posted in any of their on any of their platforms. They banned the just getting the information. If you posted like their you know web address like into your like you know into Facebook or anything like that, it would immediately delete it.
Yeah, they like put filters in algorithms to kind of circumvent those issues. Yeah, it's
exactly
crazy.
So it's like so it's something that's you know completely legal. It's not against, but it's just the government did not want that kind of information being out there. They couldn't suppress it because it's truthful information. Yet their tech people who are, you know, uber leftists like they are,
and that's circumventing the First Amendment then, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, yeah, they all believe the same thing, but this is their way of circumventing the, you know, the government from doing it to us. Like, well, we'll just have our tech people do it on our behalf.
That's right.
And so that's what I'm in the, you know, Second Amendment, First Amendment, truthful information, you know, all those kind of things. And so, and then I guess that, you know, brings us here to, you know, Christchurch and everything where I got involved in this.
Exactly. Let's get into that. And there's a lot to unpack already in what you said, and there's all good points about censorship and stuff. And I'm sure we'll be able to kind of tie some of this together a little bit later. But tell us about how you kind of reacted then as a gun rights activist, I guess, for the lack of a better term, to this particular event and how you've seen not only this event, but as you brought up, multiple other events in the past. They're always used in the same capacity. The people that have their arguments for gun control, they always are ready with their points. They have, it's just ready and waiting. And as soon as something new happens, they launch into the same kind of levels of attacks. But was there anything different about this one as far as
I'd say that the one difference is that I've seen with this one, is because, you know, everybody loves to, you know, point at America saying like, yeah, we're the, you know, industrialized nation with the most gun crime or whatever it is. And, but the thing is too, is like, we also have our own protections of pre-existing rights and, you know, the pre-existing right to keep and bear arms. It's not just own any gun you want kind of thing. It's you have a right to arms. Even people in New Zealand, you have a right to arms, but because it's not, you know, there was never any document or anybody saying that they would protect it. Yeah, people in New Zealand still have a right to arms. I still believe they have a right to arms. Everybody in the world, that's one of your natural rights. You have a right to arms, but it's not protected. Like in there, and it's I call it, it's a parchment guarantee. You know, it's written on a piece of paper. It's about as useless as a, you know, a gun-free school zone sign. But here it was written down, and there are still people, even within government, you know, certain judges and, you know, certain people who are, you know, elected will try to protect that. But that is a protection that we might have here, that whenever, like, somebody does a mass shooting, or just something gets like a lot of, you know, attention, we have certain protections, a culture against it, but we also have a government that's supposedly supposed to, you know, protect it and not be against it. But places in New Zealand, I'm not sure about exactly how all their, you know, rules, laws, constitutions and everything, because I'm, you know, like I focus mainly on like America and California.
Sure.
But I do not, from what I understand, I don't believe that they have any sorts of protections like that. So when you see something like that happen in one of those countries, and which people have up to this point still enjoyed a certain amount of liberty as it came to firearms, it was going to change immediately, because they can just basically, it happened, boom, we ban it. Like, that's just how that's how, like, other countries that don't have like the culture and the guarantee of a right to arms, they'd be like, well, we don't think that we as government don't believe that you should have this liberty, so we're going to take it on for your own good. It's like, so then, yeah, you got one guy who does horrible actions, and then that means that everybody else is guilty because of that.
Yeah, and the logic behind that, what is that? Like, you have a criminal who obviously anyway would circumvent this issue if he could. And there are, you know, illicit or what do you call it, illegal, you know, weapons in a lot of parts of the world, and they're able to get their hands on it. One of the logical kind of points you have to mention in all of this is that you're basically taking away good people's ability to defend themselves against guys like this.
Right. Yeah. And there are no, I love to say this, there is no closing the obtaining a gun illegally loophole.
No, no.
Like, they're out there, just like in New Zealand. There's hundreds of thousands of the same kind of weapons there, and they're going to try to do this whole ban thing. They're not going to get them all up, because they've even stated they don't know who has them or how many there are, which I think is great, but because they don't know whose doors to come knock on and come take them from, but they don't know, you know, who has them. So, if, you know, there's going to be, you know, a few people who are, you know, virtue signaling online. It's like, oh, I'm turning in my web because I don't need this instrument of death anymore. It's like, well, why don't you, you know, sorry for being vulgar, but why don't you cut off your penis to prevent somebody else from raping? Like,
yeah, it's about the same, isn't it?
Yes. So, so they, but anyway, but that's where I saw, you know, the first thing that I even thought of, like, in my head, as soon as it's going on, is like, you know, the peoples in New Zealand, their rights are going to be violated because of the actions of this one person.
Yeah.
And you even think about, like, you know, the Muslims who were murdered in there. If any of them had been, because I'm not a fan of, like, you know, large enclosed areas that are unprotected by at least somebody. And now there is going to be no way to protect against anything like that. Like, let's say you were one of the surviving people in the mosque, and now the government is going to come in and say, we're going to take your weapons. Like,
yeah, how do you feel?
Somebody else,
that?
Yeah. How do you feel? How do you feel if you are a Muslim who went through something like that, and now they're good, the government's going to come in and say, we're going to take your weapons after this guy just came in to shoot everybody? Like, well, wouldn't you immediately think, well, what happens if somebody tries to do this again? It's like, well, you don't have guns, but the guy who's coming in who might have kept his gun, you know, even though we banned it, he still kept his gun, and then, you know, has like a nice fish in a barrel environment. So that's where, when I, you know, was first, you know, looking at it from that situation, that's where the, you know, that's what I saw it. But then beyond that, I wanted to, when things, you know, first started coming out about the Christchurch and about who the shooter was and everything, they like to, the media, especially me being a gun owner, they focus on, you know, like what they have in common. Like, when a gun owner does something just evil and stupid, I get blamed for it, even though I am a peaceful gun owner. And then I thought about, you know, how the media was going to try to portray the shooter, and then anybody that not even just shares the same belief, because nobody shares the identical beliefs as them, but even treads on the belief.
Yeah, like, just brushes up against anything that remotely was mentioned, like, or anything in his history. Yeah.
Right. The first thing they say is it's a right-wing shooter, but then you go and actually read his manifesto, he never said anything of the sorts. Like, he even said, like, am I right? Sure. Am I left? Sure. And then explains, like, his reasons for it. And I remember, you know who Steven Crowder is? the community there. He had like, it was the day of the shooter. He did like a little video and he was saying like, see how the mainstream media is presenting this. Read his, like, do me a favor, read the manifesto yourself, and then go and binge watch all the cable news shows and see if you can see how the media is like twisting a narrative or what narrative they're trying to put out versus what you know to be true. You've read everything yourself. You're watching what they're saying about it and notice what the differences are. And that's kind of where I was looking at the situation from, you know, what was the actual, you know, what was not just behind the shooting, but then what was like his reasonings for it versus what they're actually saying the reasonings are, you know, on TV or who they're associating with the shooter, like, you know, trying to associate like a, you know, a big swath of people and put all their beliefs and everything as being the same as the shooter. Therefore, you also have to demonize all those people.
Yeah. And that has to, that is a good point. And that has to be, I think, hammered further that it's clear that, you know, for those who read the manifesto, that he threw everything in there, just basically, I mean, and that was kind of admitted even in the manifesto that it was designed to agitate to a certain extent both sides. You know, accelerationism, you should be able to, like, if you end up in a or he threw in things that he knew, I think, that the media would pick up on. Yeah, exactly. Like the left wingers would pick up on this, the right wingers would pick up on this, the conservatives on this, and the alt right would pick, you know. So he threw everything in there, and then everyone can just basically say, well, he's your guy, he's your guy, he's your guy. And then they all move forward politically. And so he had that Breivik kind of spirit, if that's the truthful.
Yeah, he was
in
a troll.
Manifesto.
He was like an evil, murderous troll. And it's, yeah, I know a lot of people have said that since, but it's like, yeah, he purposefully did something to pit people against other people. And so, but what I wanted to do after that was they had people who believe certain things. I believe there's people who believe in a certain thing and peacefully want to get that point across. And then there's people who have, you know, similar points of view, but then they'll murder people, you know, and for that, you know, same thing. And does the murder implicate the people who, you know, believe certain policy preferences to go for that they're trying to push for? You can't wrap up, you know, the murderer with like the people, like, I, you know,
but they do, and they murders, will.
Yeah, exactly. But they do it anyway. And that's where I thought to write this article was, I originally wanted to come into it and write like a series of articles called like Understanding Christchurch. And then talking about like all the different, the things that the shooter wrote in his manifesto. And not to try to, like, you know, justify the shooter, but just have everybody come out of it with an understanding of, this is what he was talking about, like the Ebba Åkerlund, like, this is who he was talking about, because I know a lot of Americans have no idea who that is.
No, because they never focused on her in the same way they focused on Alan Kurdi, the Syrian who died on the beach. Everyone has seen that picture, you know, but no one has seen Ebba Åkerlund. It's a tragedy, you know.
Yeah. And so, like, I wanted to, you know, write a piece, you know, about, you know, her. And then there was other things, you know, obviously the whole thing started with the Great Replacement. And a lot of people wouldn't, like, you're, like, just like, you know, the media, they have their own narrative about it. So they're going to say things like, you know, like I said, those New York Times pieces, they just say, it's racist and sexist, and that's all you need to know about it. And, like, well, what are they, you know, what is this actual thing? And, like, put it into words that, you know, other people would actually understand. So you actually can, you can understand what certain, you know, political points are trying to be made, and, like, is this an actual thing?
Yeah. So is it true or not? That's a discussion we should have, right? Is it
right?
Is it true? Is it not? And one thing I just want to mention before we move on, and this is all good points here, but this also shows that the media, I mean, I know that they do things whatever is convenient for them politically. We know that the whole mainstream media machine is a political activism machine that basically, you know, does whatever it needs to do to move ahead forward and shift the political spectrum further to the left, you know, but they have zero nuance. They have zero understanding of the kind of things that he threw in there to intentionally kind of rile up different sectors, right? And there's, I saw tweets from people like this too, and these were like people who kind of circle media, the mainstream media environment, and they said, for the love of God, media, just calm down. Like, you have to understand that he threw things in there to intentionally kind of agitate, and he was trolling, and it was all these things. And did the media overall, generally speaking, pick up on this? No, not whatsoever. No. They picked whatever they wanted to.
It's like, I want to use, I'm specifically using this weapon in order to inflame people into wanting to ban this firearm so people will be at odds with each other. And what does the government dutifully do? Bans the firearm that he used.
They follow orders, basically. Right,
right, no, exactly. It's like, yeah, it's they fell hook, line, and sinker right into it without reading. They probably did it without even reading what the guy was trying to accomplish. So,
So, okay, so let's think about this here a little bit and summarize our thoughts, because the main issue we want to talk about is kind of how this great replacement, because that's what he called his manifesto, right? The great replacement. And as we said, you know, Wikipedia has had a thread on this for a while, or a post on this, calling it a conspiracy theory. And as you pointed out, these New York Times articles have come out and talking about how basically white extinction is the same as a great replacement kind of thing, and that it's a conspiracy theory, it's bonkers.
They're trying to wrap a lot of stuff into it, so you have, if anybody tries talking about it, you get wrapped up with this, like, you know, just like a completely, you know, like they make you look, if you even try to like discuss it or mention it or even try to discuss like it, the policy of it, they try to wrap you up with this, like, you're, you know, believe gay frogs or, you know, whatever, the Alex Jones thing. It's like there's more to it than that, than just saying, oh, this is what the guy talked about. It's a conspiracy theory. Brush it aside. Don't talk about, you know, what the actual, you know, is it an actual policy?
Right.
Like, is it like a real policy that you can actually like discuss and debate and everything? They always try to, you know, squash down any thoughts about it versus, you know, actually being able to openly discuss it without being, you know, shouted down and marginalized.
Why is that, do you think? Because obviously if it just was a crazy conspiracy theory and people who talked about it was nuts, and why wouldn't they just allow those people to kind of have free reign? That this in, I mean, I know how they think, right? The way that they think. Let's talk about this. If you discuss these issues, you are it's going to lead to people murdering people. That's the argument, basically, right?
Right. Yeah. That's basically the argument. But at the same time, it's the argument is a complete and total fallacy, because, I mean, if I go back to like a terrorist incident that happened in the 90s here in America, I don't know if you're completely aware of like the Oklahoma City bombing and all that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, it was in response to, you know, 82 people being burned alive at the Waco compound, you know, when the government was trying to go in and do like a supposed weapons violation. That was a bad thing. You know, the government murdering those 82 people, burning them alive, was a bad thing. Blowing up the building in Oklahoma City by Timothy McVeigh was also a bad thing. Just because Timothy McVeigh and I both believe that the Waco incident was a bad thing doesn't make me, who also believes that the Waco thing was a bad thing and discussed the things that led up to that, it doesn't mean that I supported blowing up the building in Oklahoma City. It means that there was a problem here originally. You know, he took it to, you know, an extreme of, I'm going to go blow up something else on my own. But it does, just because I want to talk about what the, you know, what happened to the Branch Davidians there, it doesn't reflect, it's not supposed to reflect negatively on me for it. And I should be able to discuss, you know, those issues, those government policies, those laws that led to that happening. And so, like, you can't, like, me and Timothy McVeigh had similar beliefs as to where, like, you know, the government was in the wrong because of this, they're in the wrong because of this certain laws that they passed, they're in the wrong for, you know, an agency like the ATF, you know, going after people who aren't, you know, violent criminals, they're just people who supposedly violated a law. We should be able to discuss the merits of those things without me being wrapped up saying, oh, you're just like Timothy McVeigh. Like, there's a difference.
Yeah, there is.
Simply talking about policy and even discussing a policy versus the actions of one person that were also horrible.
Indeed. And what they do, of course, is that they wrap up this issue of, you know, hate speech is not a thing, right? The Supreme Court put that down and they said that it doesn't, that's not an issue.
Yeah.
You know, what you're not allowed to do according to the law is to incite violence, right? And that should be defined and all those kinds of things. But what the mainstream media, in conjunction with, I guess we can talk about social media companies too, have started to enforce is that either they just say, well, that's hate speech, we're going to shut it down. Or they say, well, this is going to lead to violence. But that's also not a thing. That's conjecture. That's simplifying. Yeah. That's basically saying,
they think it will. You know, I could say the same thing. I think that if you, you know, think that, you know, all Republicans are evil, and that you know, think free healthcare should be for all, because without free healthcare, people are going to die. Oh, that immediate, if you talk about any of that, that immediately means you're going to bring a gun to a Republican baseball game and try to shoot them up, which happened. But I'm not, but just talking about people needing, you know, if people wanted to have, you know, government run healthcare or anything, people who are discussing that should not be lumped in with, you know, the shoot that I can't remember his name off the top of my head here. I think it was Hodgkins or something. But you shouldn't say that. Basically, what social media is doing right now is saying that if let's say it was the social media was run by, you know, right wingers. If people on social media were talking about everybody should get free this, free that, free housing, you know, a right to housing, a right to health care, this, I could say that leads to, you know, governments pointing guns at people saying you're going to pay these taxes to pay for these people. That's evil. And I don't want people to die. So I'm going to stop that form of speech. Like, you're going to be allowed to talk about that kind of stuff. And that's what, you know, that's what happens in social media circles, especially around this particular topic, yeah. Which the overall topic is, you know, like mass, you know, international migration. And you should be allowed to talk about this without being pigeonholed and deleted off of social media platforms.
Well, let's talk about the issue that if you are not allowed or able to talk about it, that is actually going to make the situation worse. And the fact that if you do have, and I mean, again, I don't think he was mentally unstable.
I think he knew exactly what he was doing. Yeah. I don't call him like that. They always love to say, like, you know, if somebody commits a big attack and murders a bunch of people, if they're on the brown side of shade, it was a terrorist attack. If they're on the white side of shade, then they just had mental problems. No, this guy was a political terrorist. Like, that's, you know, I fully say that straight out. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was not crazy.
Exactly. And so, you know, and again, there's other layers to this, and people have theorized, did he act alone? There's still, I think, two other people that remained under arrest, and we haven't heard much about them.
Yeah, I haven't heard about anything about that.
How were they participatory? And you know, there's the issue of the countries that he visited. You know, he went to China, North Korea, he went to Israel, he went to a lot of different places. And
he went to Pakistan, I believe.
Pakistan, that's right. And so the question is, was he an agent? Was he working for something or someone, another agency or so? I mean, there are legitimate questions here.
Yeah. And if you're not allowed to talk about those without saying that if you talk about these, you're a conspiracy theorist who's a right-wing, you know, Nazi who wants to murder everybody. It's like, okay, you're not helping.
No, but that's what they do. That's what they do to dumb down the but ultimately it's about narrative control, right? That whether or not this was completely organic and genuine, if I can put it that way, or if it was not, the outcomes is practically the same. They use it in the same capacity to terminate certain uncomfortable topics. And they do it by saying, well, if you talk about the same topics that he or anyone else did that did these things, it will lead to the same results, which, as we've kind of talked about, that's not true, but that's the argument. And so they haven't really proved how point A and B leads to X and Y or Z or something, right? This is a huge portion in between. And I think you tweeted about that, too, in your article, which was a good point, too, that let's bring that up here. Let me scroll down a little bit. You said, daily reminder, if you didn't murder somebody or if you've never called for anyone else to murder or to be murdered, you have nothing to apologize for. This goes for everyone. And this is true, right? If you talk about issues that somehow would lead other people to do things which is outside of our control, we are not the ones guilty of that. And no one is. What about all this anti-white hatred it's allowed on Twitter and it's allowed in mass media? Does that not cause outrage or attacks or violence against white people? Of course it does, right?
No, of course it doesn't. No, I mean, it's like, you know, that's sort of one standard for them and one standard for literally everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. And this is how they play the game, you know?
Yeah, and to go into the fact of, you know, if you didn't murder somebody or didn't try to murder somebody or didn't call for anybody else to be murdered, like, just like these, you know, the people who want, you know, like open borders or to accept, you know, millions more refugees and migrants and stuff into, you know, other European countries, you know, they obviously, you can legitimately still like support that policy. Like, I don't agree with it personally, but you can legitimately support that policy and have arguments for that. But not everybody who believes that also believes like the African migrant did, who wanted to burned 51 children alive on an Italian school bus in the name of open borders and accepting more migrants and refugees.
Like, right. And no one is arguing that.
There's a difference.
Yeah. And no one is arguing that in the mainstream media. Right. That, oh, wait a minute. Here's a guy who calls for open borders he wanted to all Senegalese his Senegalese countrymen to enter into Italy or whatever European country. And right. So therefore, if you do talk about that, you are going to burn people alive in buses, right? Where's that talking point?
If you talk about open borders and more migrants, you want people to die on a bus. And it's like,
exactly.
Like, how do you make that? You can think like, nobody would ever make that jump anywhere. And I've never seen it anywhere, but you can, as far as, you know, if it's, you know, I'm just going to say, if you're a white person saying it, then,
of course.
Then you support murder and ethnic genocide and no. It's like, that's not the case.
No. And we have this these argument points levied against us all the time. We have Daily Beast articles written about Red Ice, and they're talking about how just because we talk about the legitimacy of these topics of saying like, hey, we are against open borders, we don't want mass migration, we don't want there to be open borders in the sense that anyone could come into our countries because it will lead to problematic situations, both culturally. Compatibility issues, demographics is going to change, culture is going to change. Definitely, if people enter in under the radar, more likelihood is they're going to go in the criminal route to be able to take care of themselves inside of the countries that they enter into. In other words, drugs, prostitution. We've seen gang rapes. We've seen these grooming gangs and all kinds of side effects, horrific side effects of this.
Not allowed to discuss it.
No, we summarize all these things and just say, hey, what we're against is the policy. We're not targeting specific groups or individuals of the existing migrants who have entered in and say, let's go after those individuals. It's them to blame. We don't even talk that way. No.
Nobody's saying that.
No. And so we're talking about this, the policy have to change. But they're actively saying that, well, they're basically calling for ethnic genocide of these people just because we bring up these points. And no one anywhere can actually point to a video or an article where we have said, round up these people and mass murder them or kill them all or hurt them or be violent against them. We've never said such a thing, and they can't prove it. But they write these articles.
They just say it anyway.
And it's
they
out
just,
there.
They'll say that, and then they'll mention something about the Christchurch murderer and conflate the two. And then the reader comes away from it thinking,
oh, they agree. They're in the same
anybody
page.
Anybody who's against mass migration into different countries has the same belief and believes the same thing as this guy, and they need to be shunned and ostracized.
Yeah, exactly. So they call us white supremacists. They call us white nationalists. They call us all kinds of things, racists, Nazis, and, you know, whatever. Let's face it, it's to dehumanize in our position because
they don't want you people listening to your position.
No,
somebody has to actively go find you.
They don't want people to hear the points. And why is that? I think it's because our points are correct, essentially. So therefore, the only way that they can go about this is to silence people and actively terminate their ability to reach more people, because otherwise,
they say your speech will spread. It's like, in what way?
Yeah, exactly. That's just
it. While I use violence to beat you over the head to keep you from speaking.
Yeah, exactly. And there is, of course, violence on the other side, and the Antifa groups and these kinds of things. And largely the mainstream media, they defend them in most cases. Mm-hmm. They stand up for them and they say, well, this is, it's uncomparable. These people who beat these fascists and Nazis, that's actually a good thing. And that's okay. It's not even comparable to the violence that they do. Although they're the ones that show up at events that have been organized through the proper means with the approval of the local authorities and all these kinds of things, right? How many of us go to their events and shut them down or go to a Bernie rally and beat people up? Imagine if we did, right? Imagine the outrage.
Not going to go over very well.
No, exactly. So
the thing is that we also don't. It's like you see those videos of like when you have for having like, you know, these kind of discussions like on our end of the spectrum, everybody is sitting in their chairs. They want to listen to the guy who's standing up on stage. You know, leftists can come in, disrupt the thing, or blaring the air horns and everything, and nobody does anything. They just sit there and they stare at them like, you know, we're decent, good people. We're not going to do anything. Just let them have his fun up there. We'll call security. Security might or might not come and get rid of them. Whatever. That's how it usually runs. Then you think about one of those other, if there's like a, you know, an organized rally of, you know, people who believe on the other side, like you take like Berkeley students, if you go and try to disrupt their thing, they'll probably kill you.
That's right. Absolutely. Exactly. And the violence will be kind of not totally justified, but it won't get the exposure and the attention and the consequences like, let's say, what happened in Charlottesville, right? The consequences of that one person, you know, that was driven over by the car. That has changed things politically, I think, forever, basically, in America. But you can have people attacked and even killed on the opposite side, and meh, it's not that, you know, who cares, basically, right?
Well, they deserved it. They were Nazis.
Exactly. So here we go, like, with the dehumanization
again. Anybody who disagrees with me.
That's right. So there's a clear agenda what they want here, but let's get into the nitty-gritty and actually prove that what is happening right now is actually replacement, and there is an agenda. There is actually, you know, underpinnings politically, the United Nations, for example, is a very popular example to take because it's one of the more, it's the big point and really fundamental one, because the replacement migration was a proposition from the United Nations. This is a program that's two decades old, and they were talking about this as a solution to an aging population. And the governments have largely in the West picked up on this, and it's for different reasons, but primarily it's to be able to keep the GDP at the same level each year, or continued growth, continued population growth implies, you know, continued businesses, prices will continue to rise. I'm not saying it's only an economic factor, but that's a big part of it, I think. Underneath, I think the interest groups that have lobbied for this, they also do it on an ethnic level. But tell us about this then, and how you view this and how you broke this down in your article.
Right. So how I, you know, I always come into things based on, you know, like, I want knowledge, I want understanding, I want, you know, if I don't know about something, I want to go out and figure it out. I'm just one of those people. It's like, I didn't know how to tile my floors, so, you know, I went on YouTube and I figured out how to tile my floor. Like, that's just kind of the person that I am. And so when I hear about something that I don't know about, I want to go out and actually get information on it. And I want to get it from as, you know, many sources as I can as possible. And, you know, when I come up, when I was trying to think about the articles to write, to so people can understand about how, you know, what was the murder in Christchurch, what was his, you know, what was he talking about in his things? You know, he talked about, you know, the Great Replacement. And he started off this thing with, you know, it's the birth rates. And what it actually means, like, if you take that part out of it, it's more like, when you talk about it policy-wise, it's the potential support ratio. And that's one of the key things that people need to remember. It might just sound like, you know, terms that governments use, but it's an important, it's a distinctive factor in this. So when I went out to try to, you know, figure out, you know, what is the Great Replacement, I just, like, you know, you go online, you try to figure it out. The first thing you get is, it's a Great Replacement conspiracy theory. And I, you know, said, just like what, you know, you were saying, when you go online and try to find it, you find that they talk about, it's a conspiracy theory that they want to replace, you know, governments want to intentionally replace, you know, white Christian Europeans with, you know, people from, you know, Africa, the Middle East, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, they, you know, kind of go into, like, the history of, like, you know, where the thought originally came from. They don't give any information on it. They just say, this is what it is. It's a conspiracy theory, but they don't go anywhere else with it. So I dug a little bit deeper into it, came across a few things. And there is a UN report, which they dug into, you know, demographics and everything. And it was a, you know, potential solution to what they saw as a problem. And it's literally called replacement migration.
That's correct.
It's literally called that. It is a suggestion, a policy, you know, a solution to what they consider to be problems with, you know, nations that are coming up here. And let me see if I could open this thing up here, because I want to make sure that I, you know, get across, like, the main issues here.
Sure. Yeah.
But basically, they were concerned internationally with, like, how many countries are going to have, you know, populations are getting older, they're living for a whole lot longer, and the same populations in these countries aren't having as many children. That's just a fact. It's stating a fact. Like, and even people on our side of it is just stating a fact. Yes, I agree. They are getting older, and there's going to be, you know, like, less people on the bottom of the pyramid scheme taking care of the people at the top of the pyramid scheme. Like, and that's what the potential support ratio is. It's how many young people they need within a country in order to take care of the older people for the social welfare programs and to, you know, keep their GDP propped up.
Yeah, so it's largely an economic kind of, you know, issue to begin with. But and I don't want to derail this right away, but what's interesting with this too, of course, is that I think also the proposal that they have for this, which is basically bring people from the third and second world into these Western countries to solve that, to make up for that loss in the birth rates, right? That is actually a thing which is detrimental to the economy at the end of the day, because basically you have a situation where prices don't drop like they normally do. You have an ebb and flow continuously of populations. Look at what happened after the, the Second World War, for example, or the First World War, or what about the plague and stuff? That actually opened up a completely different environment. So I'm saying this is not the full story. It's their solution to a problem, but it's certainly not the full story. But please go ahead.
Right, and it's legitimately a factual thing. Like, you can say a country is getting older and the population isn't having as many children, so the birth rates are going down and people are getting older. But then what they do with that, it's what they do with that information. It's not just stating a fact. Then they go into their solution for it is, okay, and for how we're going to fix the problem, we're just going to import. But it should be, noted in here. They're not just talking about, European countries. They're mentioning Japan, Korea, a couple others there.
Yep.
And so that they're seeing this happen. But then their way of fixing it is we're going to simply, import millions upon millions of people from, other areas of the world. That is their recommended solution for it. I've never read any other report. And, if I'm wrong, I'd like to know the answer to this too, because I haven't found anything in my research for it. So if somebody has this information, let me know. I haven't seen any other solution other than replacement migration. They specifically call it replacement migration. And so what they want to do then is to right now, the birth rates are, dropping. It was 1.7 or 1.3, children per family or whatever, in order to, pay for the people at the very top. And this is because if you have social welfare programs, and that's what the kind of thing that they want to prop up. It's like, well, why don't you not have as much social welfare programs if you're going to actually feel like this is your only solution is to, completely, transfer this many people in other people's countries. But anyway, I guess because I got a little sidetracked there.
There's a couple of things to unpack there, because that's important. As I said earlier about the economic situation too, that historically you've had situations where when the population falls, because it usually does, right? We can't have endless growth. It's a physical impossibility. The planet won't be able to sustain that, etc. So it's just a matter of, if this is the plan, it's obviously a short-term plan, because it's going to lead to a colony collapse at the end of this in some capacity. Right. So basically, it's a short-term solution to a problem, which I think would stabilize itself after a while anyway. Migration is probably the worst temporary solution you could. And it could even be argued that it doesn't actually benefit economically anyway, because the load on countries that have to take in large swaths of people, which are largely unemployable, because they don't have the education, they don't have the skill set, they don't have the language capabilities. There's been a lot of studies on this, and many countries who have a slightly stricter immigration policy end up saving billions every year, such as Denmark, for example. Germany, it's been studies coming out talking about how it's difficult for a lot of these people that have come in to actually get employed, and they become welfare dependent. Many of these, specifically the women from Middle Eastern countries, they are on welfare for 20 to 30 years,
And it's how is that, how are you supporting your whole lot, your potential support ratio here if more of the people who are coming in to fill the gap are then going on those same programs there? It's a never ending problem there.
It is. So this is totally nuts. But I think that this is being proposed because there is a different agenda behind it. And that agenda is to replace the population. This is the excuse. They're using this as an opportunity. To replace the population in the Western world and Japan, as we saw in the report as well.
Yeah, and that's a good distinction here too. Is Japan, for example, they are mentioned in the report, and they are not doing the immigration thing. They decide they're going to remain a Japanese country. Their people are going to remain Japanese. Their culture is going to remain Japanese. Their language is going to remain Japanese. If you think of, why do you call somebody Japanese? It's because it's not just because they're from Japan. It's not, like I said, myself as, an American of European descent. If I go and move to Japan, it doesn't make me Japanese.
Laugh at people who have a Japanese passport. Remember the guy? There was a story about that a year ago. It was a guy who actually was born in Japan. He had a Japanese passport. And people around the world, when he traveled, they walked up and they called up the other people from the different desks around, and they laughed at him because he had a Japanese passport.
Right.
No one would assume that he's Japanese. I mean, it's retarded.
Right, and exactly. And it's not like it sounds like, a weird thing to even say otherwise, but it's the way that it is. People from Japan are Japanese, not just because they live there, because they have ancestry there. Their language is that, their culture is that, their traditions are that, like their heritage is that. It's all wrapped up together in one big thing. And if you had millions upon millions of people from a radically different culture suddenly move to Japan, like Japan isn't going to remain Japanese anymore. I'm just stating facts there. It's not going to remain like the same country after that. And also, when you have that much radical difference in people and things, like conflict occurs. It's just like people who aren't alike end up, fighting more. Like it's just one of those things. It's like, yes, does it happen? Can you make friends with people? Can you do this and that and the other? Yes, you can, obviously. But as a specific policy, especially that quantity, this number of people, like suddenly being transplanted into a different area that is, completely foreign to their culture, to their to everything, things occur, and it is an issue. It is a problem. It does, like, things like that do happen. Like, it's not all sunshine and rainbows.
Certainly not.
Song we learned: the world is a rainbow. It doesn't work.
Just look at some of the example countries. Look at my country, Sweden, for example, right? And in terms of how it's basically gone from being an admired, welfare socialist country, pretty much, to wanting just utter decay. It's even fallen off all these happiness indexes lists and safest places in the world lists and everything else that they list every year. And the countries that have remained homogenous, such as Poland, are now ascending in those lists, right? And there's a reason for that. It's not just by happen chance, right? Or happenstance. But here's a couple of things that are interesting to note from the report as well. Actually, not that one. Let me go to the other one here, because it details, let me see, this one. It details in the next, and this the major findings of this report include, in the next 50 years, the population of most developed countries are projected to become smaller and older as a result of low fertility and increased longevity. Population decline is inevitable in the absence of replacement migration. Fertility may rebound in the coming decades, but few believe that it will recover sufficiently in most countries to reach replacement level in the foreseeable future. Now, that's conjecture. That's not, you can't prove this, right?
Yeah.
You can't prove, because this is projection. This is what you think if you're observing current trends. Just in the same way that we think when we observe current trends that we are going to be a minority in our own countries because of the policy implemented. But this could change at any point. It is indeed actually changing in some of the countries now that are offering different policies for larger families, for example, such as Italy have started doing this, Hungary, and even Russia. And that seems to be a positive direction where things develop. And so there are other solutions to it. But it's almost
that's put down. They're saying this is their only solution.
Yeah, exactly.
Why is this the only solution?
Yeah. And people need to ask that question.
If you say otherwise, it's true, though. And to go back to the politics of it, is they say that this is the solution, that you have to accept that you need to massively import a bunch of people from, from different parts of the world in order to prop up your country. Yet when another country like, Hungary says, okay, we're going to focus on, Hungarian people. We want Hungary to remain, a population just like Japan of Hungarian people. So we're going to implement policies that, are going to basically just say they have a preferred policy preference of how they want to, increase the native populations of Hungarian people. So they try to implement those things that way. And what do they get called? Racist, Nazis, xenophobes, like all those terms. It's like, Well,
look at this article, because we're on it. Guy Verhofstadt from the European Union, the commission, he actually talked about that America must intervene militarily on Hungary because they're a threat to the international order. And
allow their country to not remain Hungarian anymore.
Exactly. And because they won't accept all these refugees that the European Union wants to enforce on them. They're not, they're fighting back against some of the globalist NGOs like Soros. And because of that, they're anti-Semitic and all this nonsense. But this is how the nutcases on the upper crusts of the political establishment reasons when it comes to countries which actually is looking out for their own population first.
Right. Yeah, it's like they're suddenly, you know, we're just saying this is a suggestion. We're not saying it's an actual replacement thing. Yet then when you say, well, we have a different way of doing it, then, you know, they get the fingers pointed at them. It's like, we need to destroy this country because they're not following in line with what we want them to do. It's like, you can't say, like, you can't call it out and say, like, you're actually replacing these populations here, when it's their actual policy that's what they want to do. And then when somebody tries something different and then they try to stop you from doing the something different, it's like, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah,
you can't
say
it's not happening and then say, well, it's not happening over here, so we need to forcibly stop that from happening.
Well, that's why they have to cover it up as well, because otherwise it proves that our position is essentially correct. And there are actually some people on the left, too, that have observed this. And they've even called for a slowing down of the current process that we see overall in the West right now, which is, again, a very hostile environment to the native population. High immigration, open borders, a push to displace the native population of the country as well. And they're basically saying, slow down, like, take it easy, because these guys are waking up and noticing that. There's prominent writers from The Atlantic, for example, that have written books about this and talking about that. Essentially, what the alt-right is talking about is correct, in the sense that young white men in particular are being displaced in different capacities, right? So when people march on the streets of Charlottesville and say, you will not replace us, there's actually a backing behind that. There's a truthful fundamental principles that they stand on when they say that. But then, of course, they're vehemently put down. They're not allowed to notice this. Exactly. That's just it.
Yeah, and when people do notice it finally, or like when you actually have, you know, actual data, like, then that's where I was coming from it. You know, I know, like, not a lot of people want to, you know, like, even people who I agree on, like, my side don't even want, you know, that on their side. It's like, I write for, you know, a couple of the people, and they, you know, they weren't comfortable sharing this same story because it makes it seem like, because they've even been, you know, like, or led to believe that they don't want other people seeing them as being racist terrorists, Nazis, you know, white supremacists.
Yeah, so they just avoid it, which is like cowardly, too, frankly.
It's like, well, if nobody's actually speaking up and actually just pointing out, it's like, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not radical in just basically showing you facts. Like, you can't pigeonhole me as to being some type of, like, you know, radical this, that, and the other, when all I'm doing is presenting, like, facts to you. Here is, like, someone says something's a conspiracy theory. Well, here are some facts to back it up. And then here's the real world, you know, situation as to what's going on right now. I mean, like, look, you talked about Sweden. You're from Sweden. My family is, you know, is Swedish. I have a Swedish last name. Sweden is Sweden, too. Like, just like Japan, it has its own language, culture, you know, history. You've been, you know, lived there for, you know, thousands of years. It's like, it's only a country of about, what, 10 million people?
Yeah.
And they've already imported, you know, about, like, you know, what, between 2 and 3 million, you know, like, refugees and migrants from, you know, like, areas like in Africa and the Middle East. At what point does a country get to say, can we still be, you know, Swedish? Can we still be ethnically Swedish? Like, are you even allowed to say that without being accused of, you know, negative radical things?
No, you're not. Like, you're not allowed to notice this.
In the wake of
shootings like this, they jump on the opportunity to demonize the very points that he raised. And if he would have said 2 plus 2 is 4, they would probably deny that, right? It doesn't matter anymore. He breathed air. He drank water, too. What are you going to do now? You know, at what point do you draw the line of, just because he mentioned something, it's ridiculous, right?
And you get, as just a peaceful person, you know, debating policy, you can legitimately say, like, it's not that you are, if you did that to any other culture, and that's kind of where I remember I ended the article on it, is like, you, I could not say, I think that, you know, I'm trying to pick a country off the top of my head. Let's just say, like, you know, Honduras or something.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go and say that, you know, I think they have, like, a population of, what, like maybe 6-7 million or something. If I went and said, you know, I don't think their population is going to increase like it needs to, and there's a lot of aging people there, I think that, you know, like 4 million Americans, specifically white Americans, need to go move to Honduras and to fill in the potential support ratio gap.
Genocide.
They would call it genocide. Colonialism.
Yep.
They'd call it colonialism. They'd call it genocide of a native peoples.
They did when the Chinese did that in Tibet. They all came out. There were aid galas and stop it and stuff. And sure, there was a level of violence there, which we on a larger scale haven't seen, let's say, yet in a we haven't seen a military from a foreign country invade into European, well, but you know what I'm saying. It's like not on that scale, but actually, according to the statutes, again, of the United Nations, what constitutes genocide, it's not only the physical, like, displacement or attack on a people, it's actually creating the fundamental environment which is leading to fewer births among the group, for example. That's one of the points, right? So according to their own rules, it is genocide.
Yeah, and you can't, but you know, there's that double standard. You cannot, like, it's not the same if, like, I read a thing recently that Sweden, like, the leaders there, they were going to open up, you know, like, for, they're open up the country to, like, the Muslim refugees in China.
The Uyghurs.
But there's about
10
million
Uyghurs.
Of them.
Yep, that's right.
Well, how do you as a country of 10 million Swedish people, ethnically Swedish people, suddenly open up to the potential of bringing in roughly 10 million people from a radically different, you know, culture, language, history, all that kind of stuff, and still remain
fine.
A country comprised of
it'll
Swedish
be fine.
People.
We'll sort
You'll
that out
do
somehow.
It.
Yeah, you can take it.
We can all get along here. It's like, you know, well, what if people who are coming in don't want to get along with
it's,
you?
It's almost like they think it's exceptionalism of a country to be able to do that. It's almost like you think that they have some idea of white exceptionalism at the root of that or something.
But cultural suicide is not a virtue.
No.
It's just that way as far as only specifically what it seems is European countries, because you'd never say the same thing about Japan. If Japan says we're not going to accept, you know, like vastly different, you know, cultures and populations coming in to prop up our, you know, social programs and GDP, and they say no, they're not accused of being, you know, Japanese supremacists or whatever. They're saying, oh, they're just maintaining their culture and their identity and their. It's a beautiful, loving thing, but if somebody from Sweden does the same thing, you're a racist Nazi.
And it's bad. Yep, it's a double standard. Now, we're going to take a break here in just a minute or two, and then we can continue in part two and discuss more. There's a lot of good things in your article. I want to expand the conversation into kind of how Ardern, Janice, was it? Janine Ardern in New Zealand has acted. What do you think some of those things are going to lead to? Again, there's more about the gun control issue that we should get into as well in detail about that. And if there's any other points about your particular article that we should go through as well. But so people obviously can follow you on Twitter. You do have the blog. It's therealrightwinger.wordpress.com. How else are you on any other platforms where people can follow you?
As of right now, Twitter and the blog is pretty much the main ones.
Great. What's your plan? Are you continuing to write? And do you have other stories coming up that people should look out for?
Yeah, you know, just anything that kind of that my mind kind of starts going toward. I'm always, you know, there's always plenty of stuff to write about, especially when it involves, you know, like, you know, new gun laws and new gun controls. That's always going on. There's plenty of it going around right now. It's even writing about, you know, ways in which the, you know, Trump administration is implementing gun control, which is, you know, it's a sad thing, but he was, you know, elected on not doing that. But yet here he is. So that's always a big thing for me. I'm, you know, getting into this, you know, like this has kind of opened up a new door for me here, too. It's just anything that, you know, interests me instead of just, you know, writing about it like on Twitter, on any message boards or something. It's like, you know what, write up a good long article about it to actually get a real good point across and see if you can inform people, change their minds. So
definitely check it out, folks. Make sure that you do read The Great Replacement, A Murderous Conspiracy Theory or International Policy. It's really good. It's written just a few days ago here, and we'll continue much more in part two with you can follow him on Twitter under The Real Right Winger, but we call him Right Ringer for short. So stay with us, we'll be right back with more in part two. So make sure you join us at redicemembers.com as we continue with Right Winger to talk about his article, talk about population replacement. We're going to get into gun control. We're going to talk about, you know, the ban of bump stock that actually occurs today when we record this on March the 26th. What that means for the Americans that actually do own this piece of plastic, essentially, that changes, you know, semi-automatic weapons into what they term as a machine gun. He has some insight on this. We're going to discuss. It's pretty interesting. We also talk more about Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand, how she's handed over essentially control of her countries to bigger forces. She's placating and virtue signaling to not only, of course, the Islamic community in the wake of this, but to a more sinister plot from the point of view of the establishment and the globalist. We'll talk more about that. You know, she's well tied in with the Freemasonic establishment, with the Fabian Society as well. Her father is a bigwig within the Labour Party in New Zealand. So make sure that you join us at redicemembers.com. That's exclusive for our members, for those with subscriptions. It helps us out. You get exclusive access to material, and you get exclusive access to Weekend Warrior as well, a news show that we do over the weekends, very much like Flashback Friday, but better produced and kind of much more structured to a certain extent. So definitely check that out. Hundreds and hundreds of hours on the members' website. So a lot of stuff there to wade through and enjoy. If you do like Red Eye. So definitely make sure you support us. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after this break. We'll see you there.